also known as the Male Practitioner. And with me today, I've got an amazing practitioner. She's a deputy manager of a very busy York nursery, Becky Doughty. Hello, and thanks for joining us.
Hi, you're welcome. Thank you for having me.
So, Becky, kind of tell us a wee bit about your background. How did you start? How did you come into early years?
I left school to go to university because I wanted to be a translator. So I went to study French and Spanish. I hated every minute of it. It wasn't for me. so I quickly left and came back home. And then I was offered a wonderful opportunity to go a nanny for the British consul in Lyon for a year. So I up sticks and went, 18, I had no idea. I could speak a bit of French, so that was fine. Got me by. She was English, her husband was French, and their little girl was adopted from China. Mm-hmm. So it was really lovely, eclectic group of people. I moved in for a year and had the time of my life. Came home and thought, early years is for me. I love it. The age is just amazing. Mm-hmm. The fun, they've got no filter, and I love it. You can never know what to expect. It's just wonderful. So I joined a really lovely rural nursery just outside Driffield and trained up there. Worked my way up into deputy manager, and then fancied a change to a nursery in residential York, and I've been there since.
Brilliant. So yeah. It's just one of these things you kind of like, yeah, I think so, give it a try.
Yeah, and I'm glad that I did, because I would never look back. I loved it. I just love it. It's such a wonderful job.
It is, and you know, I think we said just before we kind of started this that you literally can do about 100 different things at the same time, in the same day, and then walk out going, I could have done a bit more.
Yeah, there's always room for more, isn't there? There's always another job you could have achieved, yeah.
Definitely. It was just, oh, do you know, I forgot to do that bit.
Yeah.
Oh, it's brilliant. It definitely, I think it's one of these jobs, I think you have to be born to do it almost. It takes a certain kind of person.
Yeah, it does. It takes a certain person, and it takes a lot of patience and courage and mm-hmm. sometimes effort if you're having a bad day to put that smile on and keep doing it for the children. And I think if you join the early years not doing it for the children, I think that's when you can become a bit disenfranchised with it. Mm-hmm. And I think that if you don't have the love and the general need to want to make a difference, I think then it's not for you. It's just such a wonderful place to be if you are the person who wants to make a change to even just one small child's life. Mm-hmm. You need to, yeah, it's for you, isn't it? If that's what you want to do.
Definitely.
It's just, yeah.
I think that sums up. But you're right, actually.
Yeah, you were like, yeah, we've all known people who maybe the early years isn't for them, and you know the people that it really is. You can tell, can't you? Mm-hmm. Like, oh, I think you can tell anyway. Like, I just
definitely
love it.
Yeah, I think, you know, like, when you kind of, I think it's because we're kind of both the same sort of level within our nurseries. We're both deputies. And I think, you know, when you're doing interviews and that, and you kind of sit there and it's not being judgmental as such, but it's trying to find the right fit for your setting.
Absolutely.
And you look at somebody that you're interviewing and you go, no.
You're not for me.
you wouldn't fit in here. Maybe somewhere else, but just not here. Yeah.
I do. Yeah. I think you've definitely got to fit the mold, haven't you? Like, mm-hmm. there's not many jobs on earth where you can have such a wonderful day, but you can also have such sleepless nights. Mm-hmm. And it really is a job of an emotional roller coaster, isn't it? Like, I find some days I have such a fabulous time with the children and we have fun and we've done nothing but laugh all day. And then other days mm-hmm. I've done nothing but fill in accident forms and had difficult conversations with parents, and you come away thinking, well, that was tough. But then you quickly forget again, don't you? And think, well, actually, it might have been tough, but I've come home covered in glue, so I must have had a great time. Mm-hmm. Do you know? And I think, like, there's not many jobs on earth that can make you feel that ecstatic and that traumatized all in one go.
I think so, yeah. I mean, you definitely get those days where you think, I could go and work in Asda right now. This would be great.
Yeah.
And then and then even just 5 minutes later, you're like, nah, stuff Asda, I'm staying.
I love it. Yeah, it's just so much fun. Yeah.
I always feel that, yeah, you know, you haven't worked hard enough if you don't come home with at least one blob of snot on your shoulder as well.
Yeah, absolutely. Snot, paint, glitter under your fingernails. Yeah.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Works, I mean, Christmas is a nightmare. You literally come home wearing glitter.
Yeah, it's still sweeping it up in March.
Yeah, I was going to say March, April, May, June. So, Becky, today the whole point of our chat really is kind of looking at real life practice. And yeah, I wanted to get those practitioners that are there on the shop floor, like we are, actually talking about an area of practice that really inspires them. And I think you were going to talk today about enabling environment.
Yes, I said to you in my email that I love banging on about how important environment is for play and learning. And I think even in the current climate, well-being, if an environment is tailored right, planned right, nurtured, loved, respected, it does a wonderful job without you really having to put in an awful lot of effort. And when I was thinking about what I was going to talk about, I kind of whittled it down to sort of, for me personally, five key things that I look for when I'm on the floor with children. And I'm lucky enough to have had experience with all ages, and now I work in preschool, whereas I've used to work with 15 months up to three. So I've had a bit of a change after coming back from maternity. And I think that as well has really shown me that my five key elements really do work. I think importantly, resources have to have a multifunction. For an environment to work, the children need to be able to use open-ended resources to be able to navigate through their play, because we all know that a game can go from pirates on a pirate ship to princesses in a castle in 0.2 seconds. And without the right tools and provision and enabling adults around them, their play can't do that. So I think just having the right resources is key. There's a huge shift, isn't there, at the moment about going into the curiosity approach and using all those wonderful, natural, loved, upcycled resources. And I think it's, our setting doesn't use it wholly. We use sections of it, the things that we think fit best for our setting. And I think really important to remember that the wonderful photos we're seeing on Instagram might not suit all settings. You know, it really depends, doesn't it, on your layout, your location, your cash flow, you know, the children you've got in your setting, things like that.
The children as well, isn't it?
Yeah, you know, like, it doesn't suit everybody, but there are elements of it that I just think bring play to life, and not just life in an imaginative way, but a life in a way that you think you are just the most wonderful people in the world, that you can do this and you know what you're doing and you've got the imagination to turn a teacup into a ship and whatever else. And I just think without those key open-ended resources, that wonderful play and learning wouldn't happen, would it? You know, I'd even just the humble tube, like how much a tube can like just enhance play. And we all have kitchen roll at home, and it's just one of those wonderful things, isn't it, that we should just have an abundance, because without it, and if everything is what it is, the skill of imagination is going to peter off. And I think with technology being such a big thing in children's lives now as well, and you know, children aren't spending as much time outside and things like that, especially in this current climate, you know, that things like those open-ended tools are going to be so important for reteaching those important skills of imagination and transferability. You know, I think, I just think without them, play is what it is. It's not, it can't move forwards. Do you know? It can't develop. And
it's like, say, giving a child a toy car. It's a toy car, that's it. It can't be anything else. But if you're giving them, say, a block or even just something round that rolls, it can be anything.
It can be anything you want it to be, can't it? Yeah. And I think as well that my next point was that your environment has to be flexible. I think I'm a really big believer in toys can go anywhere. Not so much water on carpets or Play-Doh on carpets. We've all been there scrubbing it off with a knife, haven't we? And it's painful. But I do think that everything can go everywhere. You know, I think these children that are coming through now are going to grow up with so many stoppers in their way that now's the time to let them learn why play-doh doesn't go on a carpet, because it rock hard and I don't want to be picking it off. You know, I think a really good example is Play-Doh. I love Play-Doh. I think up there it's definitely my favourite resource. You can draw with it, squeeze it, squash it, make it wet, make it dry, leave it out, and it goes hard. Yeah, I just think it's just a fabulous thing, and it's so economically like viable for settings, isn't it, that I really love it when children are like, can I put it in the sand, can I put it in the water, can I draw on it, can I cut it with the scissors. I think previously there's been a fear almost of being able to do that. And that Play-Doh is Play-Doh and it belongs with the cutters and the rollers. And sand is sand and it belongs with, like, I don't know, buckets and spades. Yeah. Water is water and it belongs with water wheels. And I think now children have always had that intrinsic need to almost cause a little bit of chaos, haven't they? They've always had that intrinsic desire to just see what happens. And I really am a big believer in just letting what is inevitable happen. Because I think if you let it happen, your stress levels will lower. And I think if your stress levels are lower, you're in a better position to be able to then deal with it. I think which actually takes me on to my point nicely, that all adults have to share the same vision. An enabling environment is enabling, every practitioner who works on that nursery floor has to share the same view of what they think is important. It's like you were saying, when you're interviewing people and you think you're not the right fit for us, it's being brave and saying you're not the right fit for us. If you don't believe in Play-Doh in the sand, then you're not right for the children that are in our nursery, because that is our ethos. And I think having an ethos is so important, isn't it, about how you feel you want your setting to be and what experiences you want the children to have. And again, it all comes down to where you're situated, doesn't it? Because the two nurseries that I've worked at have both been very different, fabulous, in very different ways, because of where they are, rural setting, in a city setting, in nature, they're going to be different because the locations are different. And I think it's just about being a bit brave, coming out of your own comfort zone and saying, actually, it's okay. It's okay for you to take a risk and put the Play-Doh in the sand tray, or it's okay for you to stack the Tesco crates that we're not really meant to have, but we all do, in a big tower and jumping off one extra. You know, I've worked with wonderful practitioners and I've learned so much from everybody that I've ever worked with. And I think that I've always worked with staff that have always been willing to let them have a go.
Yeah.
And I think the more we let children have a go, the more they'll just grow in confidence. And when they're older and, you know, they're going into the working world or they're moving through education, they're going to have the confidence to say, well, I can do it. Because the adults that are around me are going to support me, and they're going to give me that emotional security that I need to be able to just have a go, and the boundaries and the consequences are in place. I do think that boundaries are vital. I think that, but they should be agreed and shared between the adults and the staff, and the adults and the children, sorry. Yeah, I think everyone bear the same boundaries. I do think as well that sometimes if a practitioner doesn't feel comfortable with the way that play is turning, and I think it's usually during like risky outdoor play, if they don't feel that they can safely negotiate the play with the children, then I think it's really important to just say, actually, does someone mind changing with me? These children have got an intrinsic desire to leap from a 10 crate high tower, and they're doing it safely, they're landing beautifully, they're laughing, they're having a whale of a time, but I don't feel safe watching this and managing this. I think it takes a bigger person to say, I'm not 100% comfortable. Can someone who is change with me and let me, you know, do that for me? I think as well that if practitioners had more conversations like that as well, environments would become just wonderful play experiences. We all know that we don't all share the same interests. And like, I'm such a messy play fan. I love messy play. I love risk. I love being outside. I love jumping off crates as much as the children do. You know, I love danger. I like the feeling of it. I like the adrenaline rush that you get, and I can see the children love it as well, you know, and it's good fun. But I also work with team members who are really fabulous in role play. I know that's not my strong point, and I know that if the children's play is heading in that direction, as much as I will engage and support and navigate through it with them, sometimes the children will lean towards the member of staff that they know has the stronger skill in the area of play they want to go to, don't they? And I think that that's all part of like child-led learning, isn't it? You know, yeah. I think sometimes we assume that everybody is suitable for everything, and actually sometimes they're not. Mm-hmm. And it's okay to say that, you know, I'm not fully happy with this situation. So someone who is can take over, the children will get more from it, the member of staff stress levels will reduce to a normal level, and everyone will just have a really good time. I think it's I do think that those agreed and fair boundaries are just, I think, just important for everybody to know that, you know, to what they'll be listened to, that they feel comfortable and happy doing.
Mm-hmm.
Do you know? Does that make sense?
It does.
I think as well. Go on.
I was going to say, it's like, I think, you know, when you're talking about the boundaries and like the way staff are, and I think it's useful having that open conversation with each team member to say, look, I'm not comfortable with that. I mean, I've done the same thing as you. I mean, I've had team members in the past when I've been a room manager, and it's like, yeah, they're like you, then like some members of the team, they're just not confident when a child, I had children building this big tower with tires at the top of a hill because they wanted to watch it wobble down, and they're I can't do this, and I'm like, yeah, okay, I'm in, right,
yeah,
jump in,
yeah.
And that was the thing. It's like they swapped with me monitoring another child that we had, a child with special needs. So I was monitoring that child, and we just swapped. And it's like, right, he's done this and this and this. Right, I'm off. I'll go and watch these children with the tires.
That's it.
I was like, but get me in that. I want to build as well.
Yeah, that's it. And I think sometimes we, as adults, we put up a fake brave front because we work with children. We've got this like idea that, you know, we can't show our weaknesses, and we can't show, like, I'm terrified of spiders and snakes, and we've had Zoo Lab that many times, and the snakes have come into the middle of the circle, and each time I've been like shivering like a nervous wreck, but with a fake smile on. Oh, it's lovely, isn't it? Isn't it scary? It's beautiful, thinking, get me out of this room now because I'm gonna cry. And you put this like front on, don't you, because you want to be brave for the children and show them that it's okay, and even if you are feeling a little bit anxious, it's okay to have a go. But I also think, like, I think because we almost like tell them that even if they are anxious, they've got to have a go, that almost that doesn't help the anxiety.
No.
Do you know what I mean? I think sometimes I think it makes it worse. And so I think just open, frank conversations, like, it probably sounds like I've deviated off topic, but I think without those open and honest conversations between a team, you can't provide the best environment for children to learn and play in, because it becomes about you. It doesn't become about, it doesn't move with them.
It kind of shuts it down rather than enabling it.
Yeah, exactly. It just does the complete opposite of what you want it to do. Yeah. And I'm really lucky that in my setting, we're a small setting, so we're a small team. We've worked together for a long time now. Granted, I've just had like a year off on maternity, but I came back and things have moved on and changed. But in terms of the team and the unit, we work together in the same way that we always have done. And we've always had those open and honest conversations, which I think is probably why I love my job so much, to be honest, and why I don't ever feel like I have even if I have had on paper a bad day, I don't ever come away feeling like I've had a bad day.
Mm-hmm.
I think that the quality of practitioners, and that I think just the braveness to be able to say, I don't feel happy with this, is already doing justice to the children in your care. Because I think by moving away and letting someone else come in who is skilled in that area of play or learning or whatever it might be, I'm not a maths person, and I know that I've got team members who are brilliant at maths and they love maths and they revel in it. I'm a bookworm, like I love books. So give me a story and give me 1,000 children and I'll read all day.
Yeah.
I love it. Yeah, that's what I love. Some of my team members maybe don't like it as much. And I think, because we all know our strengths and things, that we do work well, and I think it makes the environment flow, and it keeps the children calm. And I think all those little touches that you can do that aren't anything to do with the provision and the resources really, really, really makes such a huge difference.
It does, yeah.
And then the only other thing I was going to mention was about overcrowding, and I think it probably sounds a bit random, but I think sometimes I see some fabulous things on Instagram, and wonderful posts from wonderful practitioners, and the settings look beautiful, but sometimes I think that there seems to be a lot there. In my experience, I think fewer good quality resources work better than hundreds of all singing or dancing resources. I think that it's more important to strip things back to the bare bone and let the children enhance as they go along, rather than, and I know that Alistair Bryce Kirk says it all the time about tough trays, you know, setting up these wonderful tough trays with fabulous resources, and then he always uses Frozen as the example, doesn't he, where like they whip the tool off and start being like, after I heard him say that, I came away and thought, you know what, everyone's so guilty of it. We over set up, don't we? And then we expect play to go in a one direction and it goes the complete opposite direction. Yeah. And you think, well, that's not what I planned. And then you're devastated because that wonderful piece of provision you've just set up for 5 minutes is just in chaos in a heap on the floor. The boys have gone off one way, sword fighting, and the girls have gone off the other way, singing, let it go. Like, and it's so right, isn't it? Like,
it is. I'm laughing because it's completely true.
Yeah, it is. Yeah. And I just think stripping things back to the bare bones and letting the children take it in their natural direction works so much better than piling rollers, cutters, knives, bun cases, trays, because the children might not want to do that. The children might want to pick the Play-Doh to tiny little pea-sized pieces and throw it on the floor. Mm-hmm. And either way, the learning is equal value, isn't it?
Because learning's individual as well.
Yeah, exactly. And I think by doing that as well, you are tailoring the provision to individual needs. As long as your provision is transferable, your environment is flexible, the children have got access to those key resources, then their play is led by them, and we're actually facilitating that without often having to intervene too much. And then I think as well, when the play gets to a point where they can carry it on, at that point there they come to us, and it's that valuable communication then, isn't it, between the child and the adult. The child wants to go one direction and the adult is there to support them. Such a purist, I live by Lev Vygotsky and his own proximal development, like I live and breathe it. And I think that having an enabling environment really does sum that up, that a child can get so far with the things around them, but they can always go that little bit extra with a well-skilled, knowledgeable, caring, loving, doting practitioner to just push them that little bit further on. And the environment's key to that, because without a good environment, the practitioner can't do that. The child can't get to the point where it needs the practitioner. And I think we end up 15 years ago where everyone's making handprint hedgehogs and they all look exactly the same, you know, like, you know. I think overcrowding as well, like, I think it comes down to bodies in certain areas of play. I think we've all like been at the painting easel and there's been 10 children trying to paint on one A4 piece of paper, and you just think this just isn't working, or there's 15 children crammed into a teeny tiny construction area and they've all got two bricks each. I think like that overcrowding as well, if you can make your provision transferable, overcrowding of bodies doesn't happen so much. And I think the children, again, the stress levels come down, they become much more open to other suggestions. And but I think that's true of all ages, not even just sort of preschool based. I think it's true of, especially true of 2-year-olds, they don't have they don't really understand personal space at the best of times, do they? So they do tend to crowd. And I think if you can well navigate the space you've got, they can all learn an equal amount, but within their own area rather than sort of pushing someone else's. And I think then you get less friction, less sort of, less arguments, less unwanted behaviour, that kind of thing. There would be my... I think that's what I've learned anyway from sort of moving rooms around, and we plan in the moment at nursery, and I think that as well has changed my view on and how important an enabling environment is. You can't plan in the moment if you don't have the right tools and the resources to be able to do it.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, I'd agree with a lot of that. I mean, it used to be for me that if I found that the children were not engaged and they were very hands-off with everything and just wandering around with a bored look on their face, it's also time to look at the environment and the way it's set up and what you've got there, because they're done with it. They're finished with it. Yeah. They've moved away from it. And that's, again, part of us. But it's also, again, another bit that you said about having that conversation with your team, that knowing each other's strengths and areas that aren't as strong, I won't ever say a weakness, because it's never a weakness for somebody. It's just an area they're not as strong at. So, you know, you were saying, like, you know, storytelling and outdoors. Well, they're kind of my areas. You know, I will happily make a bowl of Play-Doh, but I don't like it. It's one thing I don't like is playing with Play-Doh, because it dries on my fingers and just makes me red. But that's just a personal thing. But everyone in the team knows that. I will happily make them a bowl of Play-Doh, hand it over, and then, there you go, bye-bye.
I think that's okay, but I think I definitely think it takes a stronger person to hold the hands up and say, I'm not fully confident here. Mm-hmm. I can't do my best for these children in this area of play. And I think just by doing that alone, you're already providing a nurturing environment for the children, aren't you? I think, like, sometimes we work so hard to make things look beautiful, and it's not about the beauty. It's about the functionality of it. And it's about, I think, you know, you've done a good job when you've got books in the construction and you've got a little boy holding a clipboard with a pencil and they're making plans about what they're going to build. And, you know, and... Or you've got the girls even doing the same thing, you know, thinking about like gender and things, about how we generally struggle to get boys engaged in map making and writing and things like that. You've got to tailor it to meet their needs and their interests. And interests are key, aren't they? You know, superheroes, anything with, you know, generally, but for girls as well, anything superhero related, or it's just really tuning into what they're interested in and what they want to. What they want to get out of it, not what we want them to get out of it. I'm not saying that we should not impose next steps and things like that, but and it's always a bit of a grey area, isn't it? Next steps and things like that. Some settings love them, some settings don't. I was like, personally, I don't love them. I think that sometimes they can hinder what's in front of you. I think you can be so single track minded on, well, you know, they've got to achieve counting to 10. And I'm not going to be happy until they've done that, when actually they're not ready. They're not ready. They're not interested. And then that's my job as a practitioner to think, well, how am I going to get them interested in counting? If I know that that's an area for development, how am I going to tailor my practice, my environment, to meet their needs, not the other way around, not them sitting and counting out compare bears or other nightmarish resources that make you want to cry into a tissue. I think, I've changed a lot as a practitioner, obviously, since coming in unqualified to where I am now. A lot of that's down to the people that I've worked with. A lot of that's down to my just love of research and just reading new ways of thinking and things like that. But a lot of it's down to just giving it a go. And I'll be the first one to say, well, I did this and it didn't work. And I think being reflective just as well is just another way of enabling your environment. If you're reflective and can say, you know, that it's lovely that I set up this wonderful water play with the tubes and the pipes and stuff, but actually they weren't bothered and they just wanted to carry the tubes and the pipes. Mm-hmm. It wasn't water play, it wasn't water-based, but the learning was still as valuable.
Yeah.
And I think, like, that is generally how I set my mind to my job now. I set my mind to, if I plan something and it hasn't gone the way I expected, then that's wonderful because the children have led it. Mm-hmm. And if the children have led some fabulous play and before I know it, the whole room's involved and engaged and they don't need adults, wonderful, job done. The room's doing what it's meant to do, the provision's doing what it's meant to do, the adults have done what they can do and jobs are good and they're happy and they're growing and they're learning and they're having fun, most importantly. They're having fun.
It is the most important thing. If they're having fun, they're actually learning.
Yeah, absolutely. And I love the UIFS. I know we need it. I know it guides us and all that wonderful. It's just wonderful. But sometimes I feel like we all get into the habit of putting children in a box of assessment. And we need to do that because the government tell us we need to do that. And we haven't got a choice because we do need to know where they sit. For me, personally, controversially maybe, I don't think it's as important as the children coming to have fun and make memories and be children, you know, be 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, be, you only get to do it once, don't you? When I love personally being that person who gets to have all those wonderful fun times with them while their parents have to work. I love being that person who can say at the end of the day to the mums and dads, they've gone home with a smile on their face, they're covered in paint, I'm really sorry it's in the toenails. I did my best, but you'll have to have a bath tonight. I love being that person who's facilitated that and that memory. I love it. It's the best job in the world.
It's, you know, if they've gone home and they're top to toe covered in paint or mud or whatever, it's like they've had a learning day. There you go.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And I think that's the stuff they remember, isn't it? Mm-hmm. You know, they don't remember the time that I made them organise all the compare bears into colour groups or whatever. You know, they remember mixing colours with the hands and the feet and all, like, running round and round and round and round in circles for hours on end outside in the garden, mm-hmm. because that's what they wanted to do. Like, don't need provision everywhere. They don't need resources everywhere, do they? Sometimes they just need space.
Exactly. That's it. Yeah. Becky, thank you so much. That was really amazing. I can totally tell your passion for it. And you're right. Those top tips you gave for your environment, they're doable. They're achievable. And best of all, they don't cost any money.
It's just a
conversation. Yeah. Just that conversation.
Yeah. That's it. They're the best ideas, aren't they? The free ones.
Absolutely. Becky, thank you very much.
Thank you for having me.